Welcome into another edition of the Clubhouse Chatter Podcast, presented by Hercules Tires. I'm your host, Scott Manzi, and today a chat with Jacksonville University pitching coach Jerry Edwards. Jerry joined the staff last season, and while his first year with the Dolphins was obviously cut short, he still values his time, felt like he grew and grew familiar with the pieces in place at JU, and is very excited about what is to come over the next couple of years and what is potentially in place with the kind of the logistics and the formation of the program in order for big things to be accomplished again here in the near future. So a fun conversation with him. He's a fun guy. Just someone who you can kind of roll and rattle and ramble on with for hours, but we kept it relatively short, about a half hour here today, and I hope you'll enjoy this conversation and an opportunity for those that have not had a chance to really get to know Jerry yet and his story, get to know him a little bit better and get to know a little method behind the madness as to what makes him such a good pitching coach and why the staff should just continue to improve over the course of the coming seasons as well. And that is all we have for here today. And due to kind of the logistics of how things have shaken out over the course of the last 2 weeks, we will have another episode dropping next week. So losing the every other week deal for just the time being, and we'll have a fresh interview again for you next week. We'll be looking to catch up again here soon with head coach Chris Hayes and looking to add a few more interesting guests as well as we move through the month of July and inch a little bit closer to the school year starting again and getting ready to start talking a little bit more, hopefully here soon, about the 2021 Jacksonville baseball team. But until then, we'll keep these chats going. And so I hope you enjoy today's conversation with pitching coach Jerry Edwards. And here comes pitching coach Jerry Edwards out to have a chat. All right, after the meeting on the mound, Edwards trots back into the home dugout. Joined now by Jacksonville pitching coach Jerry Edwards. Coach Edwards just completed his first year with the Dolphins, unfortunately an abbreviated season, but nonetheless, year one in the books. And coach, why don't we start right there and look back to what this past season was like, as unlike any season that has existed, of course, really in at least modern baseball times. But you coming in to a new situation, a new program as a seasoned guy as you are, what did you enjoy about your first year on campus working with JU?
Well, you know, I knew coming in, we had an experienced staff. We had a lot of guys coming back. Excuse me. Obviously, I was familiar with Trent because of the Cape, and you know, when I first started going out recruiting, kind of ran into some guys, and they were just like, hey man, like the Palmer kid's pretty good, so you know, you're gonna have a good arm to work with. And you know, Rich Wallace had told me, he's like, you know, man, like if you take this job, like you're gonna really have some good stuff to work with. We got some quality arms, you know, that type of stuff. So, you know, coming in, I was excited about that, and they were right. I mean, it was a good quality staff. You know, we had a lot of options, different looks. Starting pitching was definitely our strength. I thought we were good out of the pen, but, you know, the options we had between, you know, Palmer, Santana, Temple, Casala, you know, those guys, A.J. Jones. I mean, you know, we could I've told people with the staff we had, we could have run four or five different guys out on Friday night, and I felt like we would have had a chance to win. Now, doesn't mean every guy. I mean, obviously Palmer was, you know, the Friday night guy. But, you know, if to be able to sit there and go, okay, if our top three arms go down, we still got a chance to run a guy on Friday night with a chance to win. It's going to give us a chance. It's going to compete and keep us in it. Like, that's big time. And so that was one of the things that was really nice to have that type of depth that a lot of times at the mid-major level, it's hard to have that type of depth that we had on the mound. And it was impressive. It was fun, really fun.
Yeah, not to get into a period of saying what could have been, but I mean, that's the type of staff that you sit there and you go, this is a regional built staff, right? Because of the depth and what you could potentially do to use that when it comes to the postseason.
No doubt about it. With, you know, where we were headed with our, with like our weekend guys, you get into a regional and you're running a third rounder out there on Friday night. And then you're running Austin Temple out probably the next day, who, if the draft is a 10-round draft, is probably gone. Like, you know, we're lucky to have him back. But at the time, I mean, the season was over with. He had like a, you know, 0.7 ERA. And he was throwing really well, you know. And then, you know, you bounce back after that with a Santana or a Casala. If you get to the championship game, you know, you still got – I mean, like, it was – we would have been very scary in a regional with the type of arms we had. You know, it's unfortunate. You know, I was thinking about today, outside of my 2018 staff I had at UNCG, it's probably the best, like, overall staff I've had. It would have been fun to see what it could have been, no doubt about it.
Well, the trend of JU arms going in the Major League Baseball draft continues, albeit in a shortened draft. So you really had to be one of the best players in the country in order to get a chance. And what Trent Palmer did this past season, selfishly, I wish I could have seen more, just because it was just sensational every Friday night to see what he was capable of. And then what he did on a week in, week out basis in that season that lasted just over about a month. But what from my untrained eye, I could tell he was good. What are you looking at when you're working with a guy like that? Are you doing a whole lot? Are you letting him go? Like, what does it take to coach a kid with the caliber that Trent Palmer showed this past year?
Well, sometimes as coaches, we got to learn when to just get the heck out of the way and just let the guy go, you know. Like some guys say, you pat him on the back, give him a towel, and hand him a Gatorade, and so go get him, big guy, you know. And you know, I mean, Trent was he was coachable. You know, we made some slight, very minor adjustments. Nothing crazy. But he was good about listening and talking about what he saw and what I saw, and taking the feedback I would give him and using what fit into kind of what he was seeing. And Trent's a guy, like, you know, I told the scouts when I talked to him, like, he's a baseball guy. Like, he enjoys talking about the game. He enjoys coming out and working at it, trying to get better. And I think that's one of the biggest difference from maybe his sophomore year to his junior year is not that he didn't work at it his sophomore year, but I think he started understanding that you got to work at it every day. And you got to put in something and have an idea. But yeah, it was fun to watch. I told guys, man, I enjoyed coaching that staff for the limited time we had, but Friday night was really fun. Like, there's not many times you go into a game and you're going, okay, well, I mean, I'm not really, like, I'm just going to call the game. I'm not, you know, I don't care what the other guys, what the other team has, what their hitters are like. Like, with this guy on the mound, like, we're strapping it on. And it was fun calling pitches for him on Friday night, as well as the staff. But Friday nights were really, really fun. And you know, it's and he deserved what he got, and I'm glad for him. It you know, sometimes we just gotta learn when to stay out of the way and just let the big dog go get him, you know.
How long did it take to kind of get acclimated to the staff, to know how to coach the different guys, how to approach them when you made a mound visit in a game? I mean, what does that process look like? How long does that normally take?
You know, it's probably throughout the fall, you know, just getting to know each guy. And that's what I kind of came in, you know, my approach is just trying to figure out how each guy functions and what motivates and what drives and what you're able to say with some guys. And, you know, some guys on the staff you can talk to a little bit differently, and other ones you got to nurse along a little bit more. But it took the fall and just, you know, at times being down in the bullpen and just keeping my mouth shut and watching guys, how they interact with each other, kind of what their actions were like in the bullpen, and just watching them throw bullpens and just kind of seeing how they would react to good pitches or bad pitches, and then trying to talk to them afterwards about, you know, some mental stuff, but just some physical stuff as well. But seeing how they react to stuff, so you knew, okay, this guy's pretty easy going. Like, you know, he understands this guy, like, he misses one or two spots. He's overly intense. So now I got to try to get him. What I got to do to kind of back him down off the ledge a little bit so he doesn't get so wrapped up in making a bad pitch once in a while, where there's some guys that just, you know, they make a bad pitch. Okay, just give me the ball back. I'm going to try to make a better one. But it's, you know, it takes a good 6 months or 4 to 5 months throughout that fall just to kind of be around them and get a feel for them. And then in the springtime, you got a little bit of time too. But, you know, springtime, you're so geared towards trying to get ready to compete. It's more about preparing them for game situations and stuff. But it was a good – it took the whole fall.
So you bring up an interesting point, and I'm always fascinated as just a sports junkie who's now, having worked in college athletics for almost a decade, has seen more of different sports and how coaching happens. The bullpen sessions, that's where you're working with these guys and really kind of getting down to the nuts and bolts and things like that. But for our game day, what does the role of the pitching coach, the way you do it, what does that look like in game?
A lot of it is just making sure the starters, like, they have their routine. So they know what time they're getting to the park. They know when they're stretching, they're doing all that stuff. A lot of it is making sure that the relievers and the guy who's starting on Saturday and the guy who's starting on Sunday, that they are still working to get themselves prepared, because there's a tendency that it's a game day. So some guys might go, well, it's game day, so it's still a work day. Like, there's still things we have to do, especially the freshmen, you know, understanding the importance of still preparing every day. And it's more about getting the next day's guys ready and making sure those relievers are doing what they need to do and just communicating with them. Like, if it's a Saturday and, you know, one or two guys threw an inning on Friday, hey man, like, how do you feel today? Or can you give us an inning? Can you give us an out? If we need to go to you to match you up with somebody, you know, how is that? And just, you know, finding out where the guys are each day. But, you know, part of us helping out with Coach Hayes and those guys hitting fungos, because we don't have as much stuff, you know. So during BP, trying to help out there, doing some of that stuff, but just, you know, making sure our guys are staying on a schedule and they're staying on their plan to make sure that they're prepared and ready to go. And then when the starter gets in the bullpen, I mean, like, you know, I'm just there more as, like, kind of going through the scout report, emphasizing who the main guys are, who's going to try to run, do they do a lot of short game stuff, and then just, you know, emphasizing, hey, let's pitch our game, let's be aggressive, let's attack. You know, let's go have a good day, man. And that's kind of what it is. And, you know, as I start to get those guys prepared to start and that type of stuff.
Are baseball guys or pitchers just born with fungos in their hand? Like, at what point are you certified to be able to wield one of those bad boys?
Well, when you first start out coaching, you better know how to do a little bit of it. And then as you get into it, you do more of it and you kind of get comfortable with it and that type of stuff. And it's just part of the game. It's fun. It's enjoyable. And I'd much rather be doing that and throwing BP. I'm not a big, like, I just get bored out of my mind throwing that. But I, you know, it's part of it. It's a good time. You know, it's sit there and we crack on each other. Somebody hits a bad fungo and you get, you know, a little back and forth and chirping at each other and stuff. So it's a good time on game day. It really is.
How much in your career has, with technology especially, the aspect of coaching changed?
It's changed a lot, man. You know, I've been in this over 20 years, and I mean, God, you know, back when I first started, like you weren't even doing video. Like you weren't even like taking video of guys and really watching it. I mean, it was more hands-on and just teaching that way, and it still is that way. But I mean, now that the video stuff and has come into play, and obviously with all the data-driven stuff now with the TrackMan and the Rapsodos and FlightScope and, you know, all the different stuff that's out there, it's a lot different. I mean, there's times I sit there and I go, man, like I don't know if I'm smart enough to figure this stuff out. This is a little bit above my head, you know, but I mean, it's good. Like, I mean, you know, and when it first came out, you know, you're just like, wow, blown away. Then as you kind of start getting used to it and start understanding, you can see where, okay, because of everybody's different learning style, this is just another way to try to teach guys how to develop and to shape pitches and mechanics and that type of stuff, because we're not all visual learners, we're not audio learners, you know, all that stuff. But this is just a different, it's just another teaching avenue that you just got to get comfortable with and understand. And once you understand it, and I still don't understand it like some other guys do, like it's, you know, it's there's some rabbit holes you can go down that you might not get out of with some of it. But like I say, I know just enough to be dangerous at times. But it has changed a lot since I started, a lot.
Scouting reports have to have changed a bunch too. I mean, how are you guys scouting 20 years ago versus how you're scouting today?
Well, I mean, it's not even 20 years ago. I'd say 5 years ago, before the synergy stuff came out.
Yep.
I mean, it was still, you know, and we still do it some. You email somebody who's already played the team. They had a report from somebody else or from the previous year. They send you the information, and you just kind of read through it. Okay, this guy's this type of hitter, and you're going off somebody else's advice, so you don't know kind of like what their pitchers compared to your pitchers, or are they the same type guys? Do they have finesse type guys? Do they have power guys? So you kind of got to take it with a grain of salt. You kind of go through the numbers and look at the stats and who's got the power numbers, who are the runners, that type of stuff. But now with the synergy stuff, I mean, I would still get scouting reports from other people, but it was more or less for me to kind of cross-check, because I would just go watch video and I watch tape of all the hitters we were getting ready to face, and I'd jot down my own notes. And then you try to get the scout report from somebody that you know and trust. That isn't always the case.
Right.
And then you kind of go back and compare, like, okay, this is what I saw. Okay, this is what they sent me. If something like is completely different, and I go, well, man, maybe I missed something. So then I'll go back and watch it again just to make sure I'm trusting what I'm seeing. Even, you know, 5 or 6 years ago, that's really the way we did scouting reports. You just basically passed it around from school to school. Now, in conference, you couldn't do that, and you're not supposed to do that in conference. So when you face your conference team, you're always getting, you know, I'd be getting scout reports on some of our conference teams from teams that faced them in February, and I'm facing them in April. So, you know, the team's changed, the players have changed. So I would always tell our guys, the Friday night guy, before all this video stuff came out, the Friday night guy was always at the biggest disadvantage, because we had a scout report. We had an idea of what we thought we were going to see, but we just didn't know. But then after you play 9 innings, now your Saturday guy's a little bit smarter. And then your Sunday guy should really be the most informed of what it's going to take to be able to go out there and win. But that was just, you know, kind of how you did it. And, you know, before all the video stuff.
Is there an anatomy of a mound visit? Is it more of a blueprint on when you're going to go out, how you're going to do it? I feel like that's, from the fans' perspective, the ultimate, they want to know inside the business, what does this look like when you all are out there and covering your mouths and having a conversation and all?
Yeah, I mean, it varies. I mean, for the most part, I think a lot of people think, like, when the pitching coach takes a mound visit or whatever, he's going out to talk about some mechanical adjustment or something. It has nothing to do with that, because if you go out there and you start telling this guy something mechanically, then he's really going to start overthinking stuff.
Right.
It's more or less to kind of go out there and break the rhythm of maybe the offense is kind of starting to get going a little bit. Or the guy on the mound is starting to, you can kind of start to see a little bit of a struggle. So it's more about going out and re-emphasizing to him, hey man, like you got this, like you're good enough, like your stuff is good. You just got to trust yourself, believe in what you're doing, trust one pitch at a time. Don't try to do more than you need to be doing, and just make one quality pitch. Hey man, it's first and third. Hey, let's get something down in the bottom of the zone. We're going to get a rollover ground ball to shortstop. We're going to turn a double play, and we're out of this. And so you're just trying to kind of boost the confidence and the morale of the guy to kind of get him through that situation. Sometimes it works. Sometimes it doesn't, obviously. Sometimes you go out there and you just kind of crack him a joke just to try to loosen it. You can tell he's getting tight. So you got to, you know, go out there and try to say something funny just to kind of loosen it up. And, you know, other times you're going out there to go, hey, man, this guy behind the plate, he's killing you right now. I know it, but you can't let it bother you. You just got to keep making your pitches. Don't get frustrated with him. So there's different things that go in, but it has nothing to do. You're not going out there and talking to a guy about, hey, you got to do this when you throw your breaking ball, or your stride is too short, or you got to do something mechanically, because now the wheels really start turning. It's more about boosting them up and getting them to feel more relaxed and just kind of keep them in the moment and the present, and really just focusing on executing pitches.
The baseball equivalent of the timeout in that case,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, basically, right. Yep, that's what it is.
How did you get into this? How did your coaching career start?
Well, I guess it's a long story. I don't think the pod, you don't think you get that much time on here. I got started in high school, and I coached at a small private high school. But I had done some camps over at North Carolina Wesleyan College, which is where Mike Fox, who's the head coach at the University of North Carolina, was the head coach at the time. So I'd gotten to know Coach Fox pretty well. I still had a couple years or so to finish. I'd gone to college, hadn't finished my degree, and needed a couple years to finish my degree. I realized I needed to finish. And so I kind of went to him and said, hey, coach, I want to get out of high school. I'd like to be in college coaching. I need to finish my degree, but I'm not going to be able to go back to college and just go to school and take classes. And he's like, okay, I'll tell you what I'll do. And a lot of people, like, when they look at jobs now and stuff, but my first job, I was living in the dorm. I was probably 27. So I was living in the dorm as an RA, so I got free room.
Nice.
And free meals, yeah. This was my first coaching job, assistant coaching job, and I got paid $500 a semester. That was my first job as a coach at North Carolina Wesleyan, and was there for 2 years. We actually won a national championship in 1999. And then I moved on to Eastern Kentucky. And, you know, I tell the story all the time, you know, with kids that are getting in, like you can't get into this profession looking at how much money you're going to make. You get into it because you love coaching baseball and you love working with kids. So my second job was at Eastern Kentucky as the second assistant, and I was the pitching coach, second assistant. I was getting my master's degree. I was getting paid $5,900 a year as my stipend. All I got was out-of-state tuition waived. So I had to pay my tuition out of my $5,900 stipend. And that was it. That was my second paid job. You know, when you first get into it, I got into it because I enjoyed high school baseball. I enjoyed high school athletics, but I knew I wanted to try to coach at the highest level that I could coach at. And I really enjoyed working with, you know, the older guys. I enjoyed going out and watching and recruiting and evaluating. So Coach Fox gave me my first opportunity, and that's kind of how I got into it at the college level. And then Jim Ward at Eastern Kentucky gave me really my first full-time assistant pitching coach job at Eastern Kentucky. I was a graduate assistant. Back then, this was 2000 now, Manzi. Back in 2000, it was only 20 years ago, Jim Ward at Eastern Kentucky had been to four regionals and was the only paid coach they had at Eastern Kentucky at that time in 2000.
My goodness.
Jason Steen was the assistant recruit. He was the recruiting coordinator, lead assistant. Jason Steen's now an assistant coach at Duke University. And myself, we were Coach Ward's two assistants. Neither one of us were paid, and we both worked full-time. Jason taught classes. He had gotten his degree, played at EKU for Coach Ward, got his degree. He was teaching like off-campus at the satellite campus for EKU, PE classes, coaching baseball. I was the GA, full-time number two assistant, and taking my master's classes. And so that was our coaching staff. Coach Ward was the only paid coach at Eastern Kentucky back in 2000.
What a difference 20 years makes, yes. Especially for the mid-major level.
Right, and you talk about how's the technology changed baseball. You know what I'm saying? And in 20 years, and you know, some people go, wow, 20 years is a long time. Well, it's not really that long of a time, you know, that you know you've gone from that mid-major level where, I mean, Coach Ward was teaching classes at the time, so he was still teaching classes and was the only full-time coach they had at EKU at the time. To now, to what you know, guys are making, and you know, even us as assistants, and obviously the head coaches and stuff. But that's probably a little bit more than what you wanted.
No, that's great.
That's how I got into it. Coach Fox, Mike Fox, gave me my start at North Carolina Wesleyan, and I've been traveling ever since. I've been traveling the East Coast. Made quite a few stops. I've coached at every level but NAIA. So. I've been quite a few places.
You're not going to leave us to go take a job down at Weber International or something soon here.
No. No, that's not the plan right now. No. The plan is to be here for a while, no doubt.
All right. I like the sound of that. Yeah. Don't want, you know, hitting for the cycle's good, but maybe not in this case.
No, you're right. No, you're good. No, I'm good. I'm happy where I am right now. Yeah.
You're a North Carolina guy though. So to leave North Carolina or your previous stop at UNCG, come down here. Uh-huh. Obviously, I think that must say something about what JU and the baseball program and everything, what it looks like to the outsiders. We always tout it from the inside. Yeah, we think it's great. But what really kind of drew you to this opportunity and said, man, that's where I got to be?
Well, you know, we played you guys when I was at UNCG a couple years ago. And I remember looking at a schedule. When Link gave us the schedule, he's going through the schedule and he's like, yeah, we got JU coming here. I'm like, why are we playing Jacksonville? Like, what are we doing? Like, why are we bringing a regional team in here to play? Like, what, Link, what are you thinking, man? Like, why are we doing this? He's like, well, they're going to come here. We're going to go to them the next year. I'm like, well, that really – great. That's awesome. We get to play them guys 2 years in a row, non-conference. I'm like, oh, my gosh. So, you know, playing and I knew Rich – I didn't know Coach Hayes that well, but Link and Coach Hayes are really good friends. And so when the job came open, it was an opportunity. Some things were transitioning at UNCG. I talked to Link about it. And Link was like, you know, it's a very good program. They're gonna have a chance to go to regionals every year. Hayes is a baseball guy. It's a baseball school. You can get an at-large bid. And ultimately, as coaches, if you're not at a Power Five school, the opportunity to get an at-large bid is huge. Like, if you're in a league that you have that opportunity, then you know if you go in and work and you coach and you get the right guys, you're going to have a chance to go to postseason play, even though you don't win four games in May. You know, and Jacksonville's done that. And so to have that opportunity and to come down and, I mean, you know, to play our non-conference schedule against Florida and Florida State and UCF, and to play who we play on the weekends and to play in the league and the guys that have come out of this league professionally and that stuff, you know, it's a good league. So it was a good opportunity for me. And I think a little bit, I don't think it was – I think it was a step up, a move up competition-wise, baseball-wise, in my opinion. And it was in Florida. And I tell you what, man, I enjoyed playing in February without having to wear Under Armour pants under my uniform and having to wear Under Armour cold gear and gloves and a hoodie and a jacket opening weekend. I love it. Like, it was very enjoyable this year opening weekend compared to some of the opening weekends I've had before.
That Friday night in southeastern Louisiana, though, in Hammond, that was
cool. Yeah, that was cool. That was different. That was, I mean, more like it. Yeah.
Yeah, that was – all we did was go west. We didn't even go north, and it was unbelievable. North,
no. Yeah, you thought if you're going that way, it's still going to be warm, but now that little cold spell came through there, and it was chilly that Friday night, no doubt about it. Yeah.
Man, that was one of those nights where I felt like I was one of the guys. Didn't have a spot in the press box. I'm out there in the elements battling.
Yeah, it was a tough night that night, no doubt.
Oh, yeah, no doubt about it. What do you miss most about North Carolina? There's that's a state I love personally, never having lived there, but visiting, and there's a lot of different elements to that state. What stands out about NC to you?
Obviously, you know, being home and, you know, knowing people and stuff, that's always I didn't realize coming down here to Florida, especially Jacksonville, Hayes told me that, like, you're still going to get kind of the four seasons. And I'm like, come on, man, it's Florida. You know, it's like, it's hot all the time. He's like, no, we're not in Miami. We're not even in Orlando. It's hot down there all the time. But in Jacksonville, you'll still get the four seasons, which it's a little bit different of the four seasons than what North Carolina is. But that's a good, you know, North Carolina, you get a true four seasons. You know, the fall is a really nice time when it starts to cool down after the summertime and stuff.
Fall's like 2 weeks here.
Yeah, I know. But it's okay, though. But, you know, at least you get a little bit of it. Right? Yeah,
and then it's winter real fast.
Yes. To be honest with you, I'm not going to say all the food, but I miss good Eastern North Carolina vinegar-based barbecue. And that's the thing right there. And, you know, some of the stuff, I mean, I knew some people, so I was able to, you know, get some different types of foods. I enjoy dabbling in grill works from time to time. And so I could get some different stuff, some, you know, what we would call country food, and be able to cook some things on the grill and that type of stuff. But Jacksonville is very similar to North Carolina. It really is, with the people. The people in here are very friendly, obviously this is a lot bigger than anywhere I've ever lived before, but, you know, the weather is comparable at times, so that'd probably be the biggest thing. I mean, I adapt pretty well. Like I said, I've been to a lot of places, Eastern North Carolina barbecue, man, you can't beat it.
You know, this is a town that, and I don't want to name any names at risk of upsetting some sponsors here, but we'll get together offline and talk about it a little more. But this town is a weird melting pot of barbecue places. I mean, you could kind of get, I think you can get pretty good stuff for a variety. I mean, none of it's quite to the level of, if you go to Texas and get Texas barbecue, if you go to North Carolina, get North Carolina barbecue. But we've got a couple, like, I've got like specific barbecue places I go to for specific meats. It's like, all right, okay. I know they do pork well. I know they do brisket well. I know they do chicken well, you know? So we'll chat about this. We'll find some spots for you to go out and try here soon.
I like it. Absolutely. Love it. Yeah. Good idea.
We'll end this with this. I've been thinking about this a bit as of late, and then you said it and it triggered it. You said part of the reason why you were told this job is a good job, Coach Hayes, the term baseball guy. I feel like we hear that term sometimes. We hear the term football guy, basketball guy, baseball guy. What in your opinion does that mean? What defines a baseball guy?
Baseball guys, and we talk about this a lot, I think, in recruiting. When you go out recruiting, there's a lot of good players out there, but you want to recruit a baseball guy. And to me, a baseball guy is when he wakes up in the morning, that's what he's thinking about. Like, what am I going to do today? Like, what is my agenda? How am I getting better? I'm not just a player, but also coach too, that when you get up, like, you're eager and you look forward to going into the office and getting around the guys, planning out practice, and just trying to figure out, you know, what can we do today to get better and make our guys, you know, better players and better people and that type of stuff. And guys who, you know, you sit around and you talk about the game, and it's not one of those things where, you know, a baseball guy is not what you do, is who you are. And so when you're out, like, you can carry on a conversation about other things, but it ultimately it's going to come back to somehow or another and work back into baseball somehow, that they kind of intertwine. But, you know, and the fact that he's, you know, it's how you go about running your program and understanding kids and that type of stuff, that all kind of wraps into what a baseball guy is, who just loves the game and is trying to do what he can to make the game better, to make the kids better, and to continue to kind of grow the game of baseball the best way that we can grow it, you know, day in and day out.
I love that answer. I mean, I'm trying to become more of a baseball guy, but hanging around with you guys, that helps. It helps a lot.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah, I appreciate it.
Jerry Edwards, he is the pitching coach for Jacksonville University. Wrapped up year one. I think we're officially now in year two now, right? Because we just flipped over the calendar to July, new fiscal year. It's time to start thinking about the 2021 season. And hopefully we'll – I would have asked you a question about that, but nobody's got any answers. So I don't want to – yeah, unfortunately. So we'll
no answer.
We'll just wait and see how things play out going forward here. But thanks for joining me today on the Clubhouse Chatter Podcast. Great catching up, and hopefully we'll see each other here again soon.
Manzi, I appreciate it, man. That was a blast. Anytime, man. Love to do it again. Right.
I want to thank Coach Edwards, Jerry, for joining me here on the podcast today, the Clubhouse Chatter Podcast, presented by Hercules Tires. Ride on our strength, Hercules Tires. I'm Scott Manzi saying so long from this episode of the Clubhouse Chatter Podcast. Talk to you next week.